Welcome back to Rotten Zombies with Keith Carpenter and the Ren.
Welcome back, one and all, to Rotten Zombies with Keith Carpenter and
the Ren, as we move into double digits.
Oh, dude, I know. Isn't it awesome? Big news, big news. We've gone from 30 minutes to 45 minutes. Now we've inched our way up to a full hour.
Yes.
But, dude, that's because of interviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Good interviews. The interviews are cool. I'm loving doing them. Now, I do want to apologize to the listeners because sometimes the audio on interviews is a little weird because being in Asia, I have to call these people across the freaking planet.
Right.
Usually using, I use Uvu because it lets you record the conversation. And so usually I'm calling their phone and I'm, you know, getting a kind of a wonky kind of a, you know.
Nice plug. Maybe they can sponsor it.
Hey, yeah.
Rotten Zombies brought to you by Uvu.
Yeah. I'm going to contact the Uvu people, see what they think.
There we go. I'm sure they'd like to be associated with a podcast about the flesh eating.
Why not?
Undead.
Why not? Well, and I changed the format a little bit, so don't be surprised. Usually we come in for about, you know, a minute, then we go back out to a little commercial break, blah, blah, blah. But you know what I decided? I decided life's too freaking short. You know,
okay.
I'm just gonna do it however I want to do it. For instance, the interview in this particular episode is with Mr. Tom Tolles.
Okay.
Everyone out there who loves them a good zombie movie has seen the remake of Night of the Living Dead, which we're actually going to talk about today. But Tom Tolles was in that movie, and we're going to have an interview with him later. But in this episode, we're going to have like paranormal news and all that stuff. In next week's episode, we're probably going to forego paranormal news because we have an interview with one of my favorite people, one of my best friends in the whole world, who's this guy named Matt Fichtner, who does the Creepy Puppet Project. Anyway, so his interview is kind of long, so we may not do paranormal news. I think Bonnie will forgive us.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, speaking of Bonnie, I got to tell you, man, she's a little bulldog, that Bonnie. Because, you know, I don't know if you've read, but the state of California just passed a law where anyone doing online business out of the state of California now has to pay a tax for that. For instance,
wait, if you're in California?
Yes, for instance, perfect example. And this was on the news. Matter of fact, my book Zombie Circus was shown on the national news.
Really?
Yeah, because she was talking about what's happened is the state of California passed a law basically saying that if you do, for instance, take Bonnie Vint, for example. Bonnie Vint is an affiliate or an associate with Amazon.com.
Okay.
Anything she does, any people she sends to Amazon.com or whatever, she has like an agreement with them. If they buy a book based on her recommendation or based on her sending them there or whatever, she gets money for that.
Right.
Well, now the state of California has told Amazon.com, anyone who refers someone to you and you make a sale on that referral who lives in the state of California, you have to pay taxes on that. And you know what Amazon.com said?
What?
They gave him the big middle finger.
Really?
They said, fuck you. We don't need your business. And but the problem with that is now everyone like Bonnie Vint, who does that sort of thing, and there's like over 25,000 plus of them, they're now basically they've been fired basically because now they no longer get that benefit. Like Bonnie now, if she refers people to Amazon.com and they buy stuff from Amazon, she does not get any money. Her contract has been nulled
and voided.
Can they
just do that? Can they just void a contract
overnight? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, we were going to pay you, but now we can't because we're not going to pay the state of California taxes for that because screw them.
That's fucked up. So what is she doing?
But anyway, the thing is basically she's basically contacted all the city and state government officials and the news people and all that and said, look, basically myself and over 200 or over 25,000 other people have basically been fired. Now we don't have that income anymore. And it's caused a big stink.
All right, Bonnie, fight the power.
Thanks to her. You know, one person can do a lot of stuff, you know. So anyway, it's kind of like, you know, when one zombie gets in your house, they can destroy everything. Well, one person doing the right thing can also make a big difference.
That's pretty cool.
Do you like that little zombie reference?
I like that. I appreciated that. I thought it was a bit of a stretch.
I thought I'd let that go. Anyway, well, let's talk about a teeny bit of zombie news before we get into our movie review. So let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Yes.
There's been some news on The Walking Dead. You want to share a little bit about what you heard about this?
I heard that they had finally cast the two leads for the Herschel Farm storyline.
That's right.
For those of you who read the graphic novel, you know that the Herschel Farm is the second happens in book two after the events of season one.
And actually, I didn't realize this, but the first, what, six episodes or however many were made for last season, those were all really based on the first book.
Yeah, the first trade.
Yeah, the first.
But they kind of went their own way.
No, of course, of course.
They introduced new characters.
Yeah, of course, they strayed away from that. But I didn't realize they hadn't even started to get into any of the meat of the next part of the story. But anyway, so according to TV Guide, Lauren Cohan of Supernatural fame, The Vampire Diaries, and Chuck, she's been cast as Glenn's love interest. Glenn is the Asian guy, right?
Yep.
Yeah. She's been cast as his love interest, and her name is,
Maggie.
Yeah, Maggie Green is the character's name. And veteran actor Scott Wilson. Man, I'll tell you, we all know Scott Wilson. The minute
I saw
his picture,
you might not know the name, but you see the picture.
This guy's been in everything. He's been in Cold Blood. He's been in Monster, June Bug. Anyway, he's been cast as her father, Herschel.
Cool.
So those two people have been cast, which is great news because it means things are rolling, man. Yep. Things are moving forward.
No, I've seen Lauren Cohan in pretty much, like what you mentioned, Chuck, Vampire Diaries, Supernatural.
Yeah,
she's a really good actress.
Yeah, she's good.
I don't know, based on the comic books, the character seemed a lot younger to me.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, she's sort of in her mid-30s or
well, see, you and I, 30s. Yeah, you and I were debating that a minute ago. I think, because based on the books, to me, Glenn seems like kind of a teenager. I mean, to me, he could be 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know? But the actor doesn't seem, in the series, doesn't seem
he
to
seems
be
young
like
to me, though. I mean, he doesn't seem as young as the character in the books, but the actor playing him seems quite young.
Well, she definitely seems older than the character in the book. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you on that.
But I'm okay with that. I mean, she's a good actress, so we'll see where they take the characters and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, okay. So anyway, everyone, welcome. We're so glad to have you back. This is episode 11, and I just wanted to reiterate that last week in episode 10, we gave away to one of our followers.
Yes,
we gave
to Paul Tagonist.
To Paul Tagonist of our friend from ZMDB, the Zombie Movie Database. Anyway, Paul Tagonist got a copy of Freeze Dried the Awakening.
Did you send it to him yet?
No, not yet, because it's kind of tough, because, you know, I live here. I don't live in the States, so I literally have to get the book from the publisher, autograph it, and then send it out to him. So because I live in Malaysia, that takes a little bit of time, but he's totally cool. He said, don't worry, take your time, just get it to me whenever.
Oh, that's
so nice. I'm in the process of getting the book so I can sign it.
So was he happy he won? Was he excited?
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, he was on Facebook all telling people, and I'm like, shh, wait, that's for the next episode. Shut up. Shut up.
You'll ruin the surprise.
But that's okay. I'm glad he was excited because we're excited too. So, well, I'll tell you what. I actually wanted to – let me find it here. Yeah, here we go. I wanted to, courtesy of our friends at ZMDB, since I brought that up, I wanted to just real quick, because we have plenty of time in this episode. I wanted to bring up a list here. Now, this is courtesy of our friend David Oates, a.k.a. Verhoskin of ZMDB, for any of you ZMDB
Verhoskin?
People. That's his handle on
his
ZMDB.
Handle?
And he's like the guy. I mean, he's the guy who posts all the new stuff and brings you all the cool information.
All right.
But here are some releases of zombie movies on DVD for the first week of July. So they have been released. You can find these now out there. So
you have to search them.
So here's number one is called Bloodlust Zombies. Now, I just want to make it clear. I'm giving you a list that basically has been put out there by my friend Dave Oates. Now, I am in no way saying that these are good zombie movies. I'm just saying they are zombie movies that are available.
Bloodlust Zombie is a pretty good title.
Actually, it sounds good. I've not seen it. So
I assume it's about a zombie who lusts for blood.
Sounds like it. But I'm just making it clear that I'm not necessarily endorsing the movies. I'm just letting you know they're out there. So anyway, number one, Bloodlust Zombies is available on DVD. Two, Drive-In Horror Show. Now, that actually sounds pretty cool. I may have to check that
out. Drive-In Horror
Show. It sounds kind of retro, you know. Drive-In Horror Show is another zombie movie on DVD. Frankenstein Syndrome.
Okay.
Doesn't that sound interesting, though? Frankenstein Syndrome? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm having, like, flashbacks of black and white, you know, Vincent Price kind of
I don't stuff. Think it's going to be black and white.
No, I know. I'm just saying that's what pops in my head. I have no idea what the movie's like, but it sounds cool. It's on DVD. Check it out.
I think you always think of these things as the first thing you saw as a kid.
Probably.
For me, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but the first exposure I had to Frankenstein was this movie called Monster Squad.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That was your first exposure to Frankenstein?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you see the pictures,
just shows
the first movie I ever, because
that shows the age difference between you and I.
Growing up in Malaysia, you couldn't find the James Whale Frankensteins even if you wanted to. So I mean, the first time I saw vampires and Frankenstein and werewolves and all that was in the Monster Squad movie, which I love to this day. I still
love
that.
All those are they Columbia? Is it Columbia
Universal?
Pictures?
The Universal, yeah. Universal Pictures monsters. You had the Mummy. You had the.
It's so funny, dude. It's funny that you say that because now you're making me think, and this is dating me so much. But my first exposure to Frankenstein that I can remember before I actually went back and watched the old movie, which was more recent, was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And that was...
You know, I've never seen a single Abbott and Costello.
Oh, my God. Okay, you got to see. They're funny, man. I'm sorry. They're just
really?
Funny.
Does this
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, Abbott and Costello Meet the Werewolf, Abbott and Costello Meet the
Mummy.
Yeah,
but do you think it'll still hold up after all this
I think
time?
So. It's pretty funny, dude. I don't. We got to get them, and you and I ought to watch them together. I'd love to see your reaction.
I only know they're who's on first, which is brilliant.
Yeah, which is brilliant. Anyway, we digress. Okay, so the next one that's available on DVD, Wisconsin Project X.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so those are the first four Bloodlust Zombies, Drive-In Horror Show, Frankenstein Syndrome, and Wisconsin Project X are available on DVD. Now from Amazon.com, you can specifically from Amazon.com, the other ones, they may be available through other organizations, other websites. But anyway, from Amazon.com we have, okay, it is a note here for Hoskin, to search under the director's name Andy Davis. We also have okay. I'm sorry. Those it's saying that those four that I just gave you are available on Amazon.com. I'm sorry. He puts all these notes in amongst the titles of the movies, which confuses me.
Is there any description on the stories or?
But
just the stories of the films.
No, not really. He just has the names of them. So I guess you're kind of just shooting in the wind there and taking a chance.
Well, so far I think Bloodlust Zombie wins the title of the four. The title race.
Now, there's also an online series, zombie series, called Apocalypse Boys. And that's another one that's available now on DVD. And you can get that at www.apocoboys.com. It's APOCBOYZ.com. So anyway, those are the ones that are available now. Check them out. Go back, take the podcast, rewind, go back and listen to them again so you have the list. You can write it all down,
cool.
Whatever you want to do. So anyway, so those are just some available DVD zombie movies. And now we're going to delve into probably one of my favorite zombie movies, I have to say, and that is the remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Really, the color version.
I just wanted to say, though, because of the situation that George Romero found himself in regarding the rights to the movie that he made, a lot of people have made remakes out there. So there's like remakes like... Night of the Living Dead 3D, with Sid Haig in it. There's all these different remakes. This is probably my favorite. So anyway.
Oh, interesting. So wait, Romero doesn't own the rights
well,
to this
movie. Well, there was
movie,
some... I, you know what? And I don't want
to... Because I know that the rights were split because he went off to do his Dead movies and then there was the Return of the Living Dead series, which was by, I think, the same one of the people who worked on Night of the Living Dead.
I believe so, yeah. I believe so. But all I know is that somehow, and I've seen an interview with him and I can't remember the details, but somehow there's something that they didn't do that nailed down the fact that they owned the rights to this movie. And so it was a little bit nebulous, and so because of that, that's actually one of the reasons they went back and made this remake, from what I understand, was to kind of pin all that shit down.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so Night of the Living Dead remake, 1990. It was directed by Tom Savini, who was a very well-known name in zombie movies. It was written by John A. Russo, who was one of the original creators with George Romero of the original movie. obviously based on George Romero's original movie. And it starred Tony Todd, Patricia Tallman, and Tom Tolles, who we'll talk to in just a little bit.
Later, yes.
So now, here's my take on this. I thought, first of all, I liked it. Okay, I'll just go ahead and spit that out there. I liked the movie. I thought that it was enough like the original... It respected the original enough that it really held true to the feeling or the feel of the original movie. Mm-hmm. I felt like it brought a lot of new interesting things to the table. Anyway, what did you think?
I liked it. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember liking it when I first saw it. It's just my thing is I have very clear memories of watching the original Night of the Living Dead for the first time. Mm-hmm. I remember I was in New York. I had insomnia, and it was on at sort of like 1 a.m. And I'd never seen it before, and I watched it, and it just blew me away. I was just amazed at how amazing this movie was, because I'd never been a fan of black and white and all that kind of stuff. I like modern color stuff, but I mean, I love that movie. So having said that, I think I love the original so much that any remake to me will still feel like it's good, but it doesn't quite measure up to the emotional experience I had watching the 1968 version.
Yeah, 1968.
The 68 version. So, I mean, I liked it because, one thing I liked about it is Tony Todd is one of these character actors, and he's, he's probably best known as Candyman in series. So he is, he does, and he's Death in the Final Destination series, right? He either plays like a morgue dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Also Death, because he always talks to people about what's happening.
Yeah, he's like the guy who knows what's going on Supernatural. Yeah.
And it's really cool because he's usually playing these either villains or sort of very sort of like supernatural creatures or characters. And it's nice to see him play the sort of the male lead in this movie and pull it off quite well, I thought.
Yeah, I thought he was good. And I thought he did a good job of portraying that character a lot staying true to the
spirit
of the way the original actor played the original character. But that also brings me to something else. I don't want to get too much into it because the interview that I had with Tom, we talk about this a little bit, but the guy who played Harry I can't ever remember this guy's name, Harry Cooper in the original, was an asshole. I mean, he was an asshole.
Yeah.
But the way Tom Tolles played him, to me, brought that character to a whole new level. You know, I mean, it made that character a lot more colorful, just like in the same way
Patricia Tillman.
Yeah, Patricia Tillman. The same way she brought a new, what's the word, a whole new aspect to the character of Barbara.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she made Barbara
a bit more kick-ass.
Yeah. I mean, Barbara, in the first movie, Barbara's this, like, you know, she's almost
catatonic.
She's almost in shock the whole movie, catatonic through the whole movie, you know. And, of course, she starts off that way in this movie, you know, in this version. Sort of starts off that way. I mean, she's definitely scared shitless, but she's not catatonic, you know. But then later on, she starts to kind of realize, hey, wow, these things, they don't move very fast. You know, we can get away from them. Let's go out there and kick some ass and, you know, get some skits.
Yeah, and the person she is at the end of the movie is at a very different place than Barbara from the original movie.
Yeah.
I mean, no, there are nice things about this film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a good movie.
I don't want to say that I didn't like about the movie, because there really isn't anything I just didn't like.
The remake or the original?
The remake. I mean, it really isn't anything that I could say I just didn't like at all. I enjoyed it all. But I felt like the ending should have been... that they should have stayed a little truer to the ending of the original movie. Mm. You know, because in the original movie, the main character, the black actor, he survives this entire night. And see, the reason I bring this up is because for me as a young teenager, when I first saw the movie, to me that was such a statement.
Yeah.
It's like this black guy in this little farmhouse survives a whole night of zombies only to be blown away by the redneck sheriff, you know, who mistakes him for a zombie, rightly so. But he's killed in the end, you know, and he's not even a zombie. And for some reason, that really stuck with me, you know. I mean, that was a huge moment at the end of that movie. And in the remake, I felt like they really cheapened that whole
thing. Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. I think what they were... I mean, I don't pretend to know what people are thinking. But what I think is probably they figured that the ending in the original is so iconic, everyone will think they know exactly how this movie is going to end. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to do something a bit different to surprise you. But I agree with you that I think it does cheapen because that ending of the original is so powerful. I remember watching it, and when he gets shot, and then when he's thrown on the fire, it's done in all the almost like still photography.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't help but have that. It has that same black and white graininess of those photographs of like lynchings and stuff in the South during the civil rights movement in the 60s. I mean, you can't help but draw those comparisons. Yeah. I think maybe in the new version they were going for more of the feminist statement than a statement about racism.
Yeah. Because
it's about
I totally agree
Barbara and her learning to be a strong, sort of very powerful person rather than, I don't know. It's a different take on it. Again, which is why I love the original so much. I love that ending.
Well, I'll tell you what. This movie, we're talking about a movie, obviously, that was made over a decade ago. But it's still, it's still a good movie.
I guarantee you, and with all the remake, there's going to be another Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Know? But I just wanted to say to viewers out there, I mean, most of you, I'm sure, have seen this movie. But if you have not seen the movie, see it. It's really good. I mean, if you've seen the original and haven't seen this particular remake, because I think out of all the remakes out there, this is the best one.
But here's the thing, though. I would say if someone had said, I've never seen Night of the Living Dead.
Watch the original.
I would
first.
Say watch the original.
Definitely, definitely.
But if someone has watched the original, I would have no problem saying watch the remake. It's not bad.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But so anyway,
that's my view.
So how many body parts?
I would give it a good 6, 7, a good solid number. It's not my favorite movie, but I mean, considering there's so many landmines when you're remaking a classic, I think they avoided most of them.
I would give it an 8. Solid 8. Yeah, I really liked it. And so speaking of this movie. Stick around, because in just a few minutes, we're going to have an interview with Mr. Tom Tolles, and he's the guy who played Mr. Cooper, the total asshole. So we'll be right back.
A man diagnosed with an incurable brain tumor spends millions to place himself in cryogenic stasis until technology can be developed to cure his condition. But to his horror, he is awakened in a world torn apart by a plague of the living dead. Freeze-dried. The Awakening by Keith Carpenter. Available now at keithcarpenter.biz or find it on amazon.com. Just when you thought the sting of death couldn't get any colder.
Welcome to Paranormal Headline News. I'm your host, Bonnie Vent. Here are your top stories. LaToya Jackson says she felt Michael Jackson's presence shortly after he died. Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul are haunted by ghosts during X Factor auditions. Genesis Creations Entertainment is proud to announce the book release of Conversations with the Dead, The Connection. Do you wonder what happens to us after we die? Looking for answers to the bigger questions in life? Well, it's available now on Amazon.com in paperback and Kindle versions. Just search Bonnie Vent on Amazon to view all the latest releases. 2 years after his death, LaToya Jackson says she felt her brother Michael's presence shortly after he died, and it's a good feeling. In an exclusive interview with Radar Online, LaToya detailed her experience with Michael's spirit and how it felt. Here's a clip.
A lot of times people, when somebody's passed away, they say that they feel their presence. Do you ever feel, I mean, I would imagine with somebody as a presence like Michael, you would often feel his presence. Do you ever?
It's interesting. That's a very interesting question, because a lot of people don't believe in that. But I do. I'm sorry. I do, because I have felt his presence. And when you say that, then they go, oh my God, she's weird. But it's not. You do. You feel the presence. You feel someone in the room. You feel him. You feel that. You feel that, and it's amazing. It's a good feeling. Actually, he was seen right after he had passed.
Where?
At his house.
And did you see him?
No, I didn't see him. Actually, when I was at his house, for some reason, you hear when a person passes and their spirit and the whole bit. And the lights started blinking off and on. And I go, Michael, is that you? Is that you? And the lights started blinking off and on. And I said, okay, if that's you, I want you to blink the lights. And you know, you just say something for a certain amount of times. And it happens, and it stops. And I kind of felt that his presence were still there, because you could feel it. But I also I've been told that spirits will come around if they feel that they're not going to frighten you, or when they feel that you're ready. But yes, I do believe his spirit was in that house, because when he passed, because when I asked for him, he came.
That must make you feel closer to him.
Oh, yeah. I've been writing this book since 2008, February 2008, and of course it's called Starting Over, and it's about my life from the time that I was with this abusive relationship up until maybe a month and a half ago, and that's what we go through in the book. And I think Starting Over is basically for anybody who has had problems or troubles in their life, and it's never too late to start over.
On a personal note, as many of you know, I've had my own encounters with Michael Jackson literally hours after his death. I stand with LaToya in her desire to bring out the truth of what really happened to her brother. It takes tremendous courage, if only you knew. God be with you, LaToya. I'm so proud of you. X Factor judges and former Idol cohorts Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul had an encounter of the supernatural kind last week when they unknowingly checked into a haunted hotel in Dallas during their show's audition tour. Intending to stay at the Stoneley Hotel and Spa during their time in town, the judges, including L.A. Reid, didn't last long at the luxury digs. L.A. didn't even know the story of the ghost. He just couldn't be inside the hotel, a close source to the trio tells U.S. Weekly. He was the first to check in and left before the others arrived, saying it had a weird feeling about it. Everyone joked he was being a diva, but when they heard about the hotel really being haunted, they just thought he was smart. After the Dallas area experienced a thunderstorm, Abdul was especially spooked, and the insider tells U.S. Weekly she experienced her bathroom faucets turning off and on their own. As for Cowell, the source says he quite enjoyed the impromptu haunting. Word is the judge and X Factor creator has become somewhat obsessed with the spirits. All the other judges were freaked out, insisted on changing hotels or rooms, but Simon was quite happy with the ghosts, says the source. He was fascinated by them. It wouldn't surprise anyone if he insisted on staying in haunted hotels in the future. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com or join us at bonnievent.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
When you were little, were you fond of giant purple dinosaurs, fuzzy frogs, or silly bears with tiny hats?
Well, get ready to ruin your childhood memories. CreepyPuppetProject.com. There's zombies, monsters, and gruesome things abound. We're the reason people find puppets creepy.
Welcome back to Rotten Zombies with Keith Carpenter and the Wren, and today I have a very, very special guest. All of you zombie fans out there know the classic horror movie by George Romero, Night of the Living Dead. Well, my guest today was in the remake, the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead, and I just want to welcome Mr. Tom Tolles. How are you, Mr. Tolles?
I'm great, Keith. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I have to tell you, I was introduced to your work as an actor when I watched the remake of Night of the Living Dead. Now, personally, I write zombie novels, I do this podcast, and I am a huge zombie movie freak and horror movie freak to boot. But I really appreciate you joining us today because I've always enjoyed your work that I've seen, and on this particular episode of Rotten Zombies, we're actually the Wren, my partner and I are actually doing a review of the Night of the Living Dead remake. And so you are like the perfect person to talk to.
Well, you know, I would like to say, you know, you could probably throw Tony Todd and Patricia Palm into that mix as well as Billy Butler. But thank you. I greatly appreciate it. You know, it was a fabulous, bizarrely fun time. and no one expected it to be quite as strenuous as it was, but overall, it was, you know, it was great working, especially working with Tom Savini, you know, for the very first time. He was fabulous.
Well, now, before I get into that particular movie, because you're right, I mean, there were a lot of really good actors in that movie. I was just lucky enough to be able to somehow track you down. And to be honest, in that movie, your character... Yeah, I mean, you make the character of
Harry Cooper.
Yes, Cooper. Yes, your character Cooper. You just really made him a character that you love to hate. I mean, he was a total ass. You know, I mean, you just turned him into this character that was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait till this guy gets eaten by zombies. You know, please take that as a compliment.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. That's so sweet.
I know, right? That's kind of a weird compliment. But anyway, let's get away from that topic for a second. I just want to know a little bit about yourself and how you got into acting.
I got out of the Marine Corps, and I had just gotten divorced and decided I needed to change my life around. And I went to a school in Chicago called Columbia College, and it was a television and motion picture and radio school primarily. I thought I would be a director of photography because I had been a photographer in the Marine Corps.
Oh, okay.
And one odd sequence led to another, and I, quite frankly, it was because all the women were going into the theater.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just sort of followed them, but I also managed to follow them into what became the great love of my life, which was theater. From the very first moment I started doing it, it was just, you know, I can't say it any more clearly. It was love at first sight.
Now, had you had any experience acting before you were in the Marines?
Oh, no. None. Absolutely not. I mean, the closest I'd come was when I was 8 years old, I told my parents I wanted to be an actor, and they just laughed. You know, that sort of crushes your childhood dream at that point. You think, okay, all right, well, I'll be a veterinarian. How's that sound? Oh, that's a great idea, son. That's a great idea. Yeah. But somehow the universe had conspired in my favor. And it worked out brilliantly, I think.
Well, now let me ask you this. You,
oh yeah.
Your first movie, from what I'm reading, because I did look you up on IMDb, and thank God for IMDb, it's awesome. It says here that one of your first jobs was Dog Day Afternoon, where you did kind of a just a short appearance with Al Pacino. Was that your first movie?
That was the movie that got me my SAG card. Yes, that was my very first film. I hadn't done a Broadway show in New York, and it closed, and I'd come to New York from Chicago to do the show, and I was sort of stranded, and I said, well, let's see what it's like to work in New York. And I managed to sign on as an extra for a non-union extra for Dog Day Afternoon. And through one thing or another, I managed to talk the extra casting guy into taking me to the final shot, which was at the airport. And I told him if I could get my union card. I was already an equity member, actor's equity member, and you could literally walk into SAG or an equity member and get your card immediately. So I did, and that was the beginning of my film career. I didn't actually do another movie for almost 10 years after that, but you know, I went right back to Chicago and started doing stage work again.
Well, no.
But the beautiful thing about Dog Day Afternoon was I managed to meet Sidney Lumet, who was the director, and he was the most gracious, kind, articulate person I've ever met, and his kindness was so profound. I mean, I think it really affected me, and it affected me so greatly that when he died, I really was upset because he was just one of those great momentary mentors that you meet. He was like a signpost that said, yes, you can do this. This is an opportunity. This is good for you.
Yeah, yeah. One of those influences.
Sorry,
No, that's right. It's like one of those influences that don't come around very often, but they are very profound in your life. Well, I really want to get back to the Night of the Living Dead. I'm just curious, how did you get that role? I mean, did you just go and audition for it, or did you know Tom Savini, or had you worked with some of the people involved in the production before?
I'd never worked with anybody, and I'd never met Tom Savini before, but he had seen Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for some strange reason, I still don't understand to this day, he thought I would make a great Harry Cooper. And he called me, and I went to New York. I auditioned for it. It was, I think, a really awful audition, but they hired me anyway. And, you know, you see the end result. But and quite frankly, when you say that I'm the guy that you love to hate, there is no finer compliment for me, because that's exactly what I wanted to get out of this character.
Well,
I wanted the audience to literally cheer when he got shot.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, because I research these movies when the Ren and I do these podcasts and we review things, even if it's a movie I've seen before, I go back and refresh my memory. And in the last week, I've watched both the original Night of the Living Dead and the remake that you were in. And I've got to say, I mean, the original Harry Cooper, you know, he was kind of an ass, but not that much of an ass. But you really, I mean, you really turned that character into someone different. I mean, someone that was more significant in the movie, you know, more significant in the story. I mean, I hated him. I have to say, that was the first thing I'd ever seen you in, and I absolutely hated you. But it was because the character was just such an asshole, you know? But again, that is a compliment, because that's what you were going for, and I could tell that as an actor, that's what you were going for. And I did cheer when you got killed, because he was just such a jerk, you know? But then on the other side, I mean, I've seen you in House of a Thousand Corpses. It's one of my favorite all time horror movies, and you know, your portrayal of Sheriff
Wydell.
Yes, Wydell, Sheriff Wydell. Your portrayal of Sheriff Wydell. I mean, he's someone that is total opposite. You know, you like this guy. You're like, you don't want to see this guy die, because he's a really good guy. You know, you're like, I wish he'd just go in there and find out what's going on and clean up the whole mess, you know, and survive, you know. But anyway, so I really enjoy your performance and the stuff that I've seen you in. And I think you really hit the nail on the head with Harry Cooper, especially. But anyway, tell me a little bit about the experience of being involved. Cause I mean, that is such a classic movie, and to make a remake that actually works, because some of George Romero's stuff has been remade. You know, I mean, the Dawn of the Dead remake, I think, was fantastic, but the Day of the Dead remake and you know, stuff, some other stuff that's happened recently wasn't quite as good. But what was it like to be involved in the making of that movie?
I think a large part of what happens when a group gets together is, you know, the expectation is to just do a particular movie. You're not concerned with doing a remake.
Mm-hmm.
You're concerned with trying to get a certain synergy to happen. You want to set goals and you want to achieve them. And in that sense, you approach it with an absolute innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Tony Todd and Patricia Tallman, they did rewrite the script to bring out, heighten elements of the characters, particularly Patricia Tallman's character. She was, mm-hmm, a much more gutsy human,
oh, yeah,
being. You know, she became a driving force,
yeah,
in the piece. And I think that added to that synergy that we could all begin to play off of. You know, her strength created a more visceral reaction for me that made me seem like a bigger asshole.
Mm-hmm.
That rectal activity on my part strengthened Tony Todd's ability to drive forward and make hard choices and become that heroic character who falls,
mm-hmm,
you know, when in the end he becomes the zombie. So it was a stressful time, because we were working on not perfect conditions, you know. I mean, everything was sort of makeshift. You get accustomed to a certain amount of good living when you're making most movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those elements weren't there in the making of this film. It was a relatively restricted budget. But still, it was a lot of fun. It was just really long, hard hours and kind of dogged conditions.
Yeah,
but I think,
yeah,
it all came together to add to the power of that film.
And you had mentioned earlier that you really enjoyed working with Tom Savini. Now, I've always been, since I was a teenager and saw my first zombie movie.
I mean,
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I was just going to say, I've always been a fan.
Person.
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of his, and I would imagine working with him has been a lot of fun.
For him, it was a very, very stressful time. There were a lot of things going on in his life outside of the film that created an additional pressure that made this particularly difficult on a lot of levels for him. But I think he, you know, he showed that he could do it under all circumstances. Most people don't know what it's like to be a director. Being a director of a film, any film, is a study in sleep deprivation. Most people aren't aware of what it takes to be a director. If you get 4 hours sleep a day while you're in production, actual filming, as a director, you're doing really, really well. Most don't even get that. Sometimes they don't get any rest at all, and they have to be the first one on the set. So the first-time directors come in two varieties, those that crumble completely under the pressure and those that wither it brilliant. Tom did not crush under the pressure, but it took its toll. Rob Zombie went in and walked through it unscathed. It was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. John McNaughton did the same thing with Henry. Mm-hmm. You know, these are people that have some sort of innate ability to do it from the very first moment they enter into the process. You know, Tom Savini did it. He did a great job.
I think he probably
see it wearing him down.
Yeah, I've never talked to him, but I would imagine just because of his background and the whole zombie genre and everything, for him to actually direct that particular remake of that particular movie, I would imagine would have been a pretty big deal for him. And I think he did a fantastic job. You know, I'm not sure what else he's directed. I haven't really followed his directing career, and I don't even know if he has directed anything else. But I think he did a fantastic job in that movie. And I think he, you know, lived up to the original and even beyond, you know. But I wanted to ask you, Tom, are you personally a big zombie fan, or was this just kind of another movie for you?
I'm a big movie fan. When I saw the original Night of the Living Dead, I thought it was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I saw it at the Waverly Theater in downtown New York, Manhattan, in, what was it, man, it had to be, I
was
guess
it when
73,
it came out?
Something like that, 70. Mm-hmm. It came out, I think, in 68, but I didn't see it until 73, something like that, at a midnight show.
I remember the first time I saw it, I was like 14. And my best friend worked at a movie theater and got me into the midnight movie for free, and it scared the hell out of me. I'll tell you, it was quite an impact.
Oh, yeah.
But
those are brilliant movies. I mean, there are other horror movies. I mean, the original House of Wax in 3D was really a well done and scary movie. Mm-hmm. The process of creativity evolves as technology evolves. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Romero would not have been able to shoot that move if he hadn't been able to get 16mm film and dupe it to 35.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's how it went. But he had to have a technological advance to create a product that fell within a budget range. And that's what happened. You know, that's how things change. Imagine that people step forward, take what they have, and create something new.
Well, now here's a question for you. I wanted to ask you. Now, your version of Night of the Living Dead was the first remake of a Romero movie. What do you personally think about the other remakes, the other two remakes that have been done recently?
The one with Ving Rhames, is that Day of the Dead?
That's actually he was in both of them. He was in both of them actually. He was in Dawn of the Dead. He played a cop in Dawn of the Dead, and in Day of the Dead he plays some sort of a army sergeant or lieutenant or something.
See, I love the fact that he's in both movies and he's been killed. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he does die in the first one, right?
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I love reviving great actors.
Well, now he survives. He survives in Dawn of the Dead, and he dies in Day of the Dead. So, yeah, he's one of the three or four survivors, yeah, in Dawn of the Dead. But have you seen the Dawn of the Dead remake where they're in the mall, you know, and
I have. I've seen them all. It's just that I lose track of the sequence.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I'm a huge Romero fan, and I love George very much, but holding all of these things in my mind, and the remakes especially, is not something I hang on to, you know? I mean, I do like them. I think they're really good for the most part. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm looking for a sense of terror.
Yeah.
You know, and my involvement with the original, the 1990 remake, sort of places that at a higher level in my consciousness, and that's just vanity.
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because, to be honest, when you look at those three movies, whether it be the originals or the remakes, Night of the Living Dead played a lot more on the terror than the other two. Well, listen, okay, Tom, thank you so much. I've kept you long enough, and I appreciate you visiting with us, and you have a great evening where you're at, and hopefully we'll talk again sometime in the future.
I look forward to it, Keith. Thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
So we're back, and
interview with an actor.
Yeah, it was the first interview with an actor. He was really nice too, man. And I have to say though, I was having some technical difficulties, so I had to edit the interview a little bit, and I had to cut out some stuff because you know we've been having that technical
wobbling sound.
I had to cut some stuff out, and I apologize for that. I wish you could have heard it in its entirety, but it still turned out pretty good, and we had a really good conversation. And he was have you seen him in House of a Thousand Corpses?
No.
Where he plays Sheriff Wydell. Oh, my God. Have you seen the movie?
No.
You haven't seen it at all, right? You ought to watch it.
Rob
Zombie.
Rob Zombie. I think I saw the Halloween remake.
Oh, and he did a fantastic job.
Which I thought was pretty good.
I thought he added some new, exciting stuff to that. Well, anyway, so we're back from that interview. We hope you enjoyed it. And
hour-long podcast.
I know. We hope to have some awesome interviews in the future. Don't miss next week, because next week is my friend Matt Fichtner, and this guy is very talented. My God, he does all kinds of stuff. His creepy puppet stuff, which you heard a commercial for it earlier, just Google Creepy Puppet Project. It'd be really cool if you did it now, so that next week when you hear his interview, you have
Didn't he do that YouTube clip that you showed me?
Yeah.
You should tell people to look that up.
It was called Bloody Hero.
Bloody Hero.
That's really cool.
That was quite cool.
Yeah, but his stuff is really cool. Look it up, Creepy Puppet Project. And next week we're going to have an interview with him. So now our next movie that we're going to talk about, because now we're doing – now just so our listeners know, you and I are diehard zombie fans.
Yes, we are.
But we've decided that, you know, because our interests go beyond zombies, and especially in the horror genre in general, that we wanted to just kind of spread our wings a bit and stretch it out a bit and, you know, do some variety here.
Yeah, but we're not too much variety. Like, we're not going to review Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, hell no. And I swear...
Jane Austen's Emma.
I mean, I swear we will never do a romantic comedy, nor will we do a chick flick, you know, romance, whatever. You'll never find that on Rotten Zombies.
That'd be cool. Tonight on Rotten Zombies, we review Sex and the City, the movie.
You've got mail.
You've got mail.
No, you will never hear me reviewing one of those. Not that I hate those movies, but that's a whole different... I have to be in a whole different mood for that kind of crap.
Exactly, exactly. So we're still going to be within the horror genre.
Absolutely.
Horror thriller
genre. And what we're going to try to do is every episode, now that we're an hour, we're going to try to do something zombie-related, give you some zombie news, some zombie tidbits, and then do something else that's horror-related but not necessarily zombie.
I like it.
I do too, man. So now this next movie, a friend of mine... turned me on to it, and then I turned you on to it.
I love this movie.
And you came back to me and said that you loved it. Now, I absolutely loved it. I've watched it like twice now in the last week. I mean, I really, really like the movie. But this movie is it's an Australian production.
Yes.
It's called The Tunnel. Let me just get you the information here. The Tunnel, it was done this year, 2011, and it is directed by Carlo Ledesma. The writers are Enzo Tedeschi and Julian Harvey. It stars Belle Delia, Andy Rodorida, Rodorida, and Steve Davis. Well, that was an easy one to say. Anyway, these are all Aussies. It's all done in Australia. It's basically based on...
You know, I got to tell you, man.
The city of Sydney.
I think listening to you massacre names has become my favorite part of this podcast.
Shut up, you bastard.
I really miss when you tried to read all those Eastern European names.
God. Don't remind me. That was the worst podcast ever. When I spent 10 minutes trying to just say people's freaking names, man. That was horrible. Anyway, so let's jump into this movie. I want to hear what you think.
I love this. Well, just to set it up, it's a very sort of low-budget film. It's kind of done in the vein of Blair Witch Project and Cloverfield, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like done as a pseudo documentary. Yeah. Whatever has happened, it's now passed, and these people have gone back to interview the people who experienced this and sort of figure out what went wrong in this tunnel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Usually, these movies, I hate them. Mm-hmm. Because I cannot get past that fundamental question of, if you're being chased by a monster, why aren't you dropping the camera and running like fuck?
But you know, I agree with you. I thought the same thing in Cloverfield. I certainly thought it in Blair Witch Project.
But this one, they really justify it. Mm-hmm. So here's the basic setup. I don't know how much of it is real and how much of it is fake, but according to the film, there are these underground tunnels underneath the city of Sydney. Mm-hmm. And these tunnels were, I think, originally created to be a subway station or train station, or they were used in World War II, mm-hmm. these kinds of things. So these massive tunnels under Sydney that have been abandoned. Mm-hmm. And over the years, they've sort of flooded and collected a lot of water. Now, this ties into what's happening in Australia now, where they have this huge drought. And the government proposes a plan to tap these underground tunnels and take the water out. And then all of a sudden, the government just stops. So these group of reporters are trying to figure out why this plan has stopped and why nobody is telling people why. Mm-hmm. So they go into these tunnels to...
But now, okay, since you're setting it up, though, there's actually something that spurs their interest even more. Because the producer, or I'm sorry, the on-camera personality...
Yeah, the reporter.
Reporter, she finds a YouTube video.
Yeah.
About some kids that go into the tunnel. They're spray painting, you know, or whatever. And something happens to them.
Yeah.
And so that's really what kind of spurs
her on. So she wants to go into these tunnels to see what's going on down there. And things just get really, really bad from there.
But you know what? I don't want to sound gullible here because it's a movie. But these kind of movies, I have to wonder how much is real and how much isn't. I mean, it says in the beginning of the movie that it's based on real events, that some of the footage is even real, you know, like police footage or whatever. And it makes me wonder how much of it is real. Now, obviously, the supernatural monster stuff, whatever, that goes on, and I don't want to give away too much because it is a brand new movie, mm-hmm. and I do want people to watch it and enjoy it without too many spoilers, you know.
Right, right, right.
But it just makes me wonder how much of it is real, story-wise. You know, like documented, you know, something happened, someone went in, blah, 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 and they're basically dramatizing it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if these tunnels really exist. I think they do because...
I think they do. I think almost every major city on the planet has that sort of a subway system from back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when subways, underground subway systems and stuff were really popular and they started building them. You know, I mean, you go to New York, you find the same thing. You know, you find these... Yeah.
I guess it's a testament to this film that so much of what... I mean, even though it's a horror film, so much of it is plausible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't think, bullshit, that could never happen. You're actually thinking, that's possible. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know how much of it is real. Maybe sort of the... Because they do some sort of old photographs, you know, where they're showing people back then,
yeah.
when the tunnels were first
opened.
When they're
building them.
That might be real. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I don't know how much of it was written and how much of it was improvised.
You know, this actually reminded me, there's a British movie called, I hate that one, I can't think of the name. It's very similar, and it takes place in the subways. Creep? Yeah, I think it's called Creep.
Never
you ought to check it out. And it's the same kind of thing, it's the same kind of story. But it's a little more of a horror movie drama. It's not
right.
done like a documentary like this. It's just a horror movie.
Yeah.
But it deals with the subway tunnels of you know, underground London, blah blah blah. And it reminded me a lot of this movie. I think if people have seen Creep, I think they would definitely love this because it's actually, in my opinion, done even better than Creep.
There's nothing original about it. I mean, you know, going underground, you know, this movie's like The Descent.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a well-worn part of the horror movie thing.
It's kind
of
like Descent in suburbia.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
it's downtown.
It's not original, but what I love about it, I thought it was executed really well.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a low budget film, so you don't have things like gore or like CGI or a lot of makeup. Even most of it is done through suspense and character work,
which
and
is refreshing.
Lighting, and
which is refreshing.
Just,
it's freaking refreshing.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you're literally on the edge of your seat through most of the film.
Well, it's nonstop. I mean, you know, the build up at the beginning, you know, where you're meeting the characters. I mean, that drags a little bit, not too much.
See, I really like that though because I really like the setup. Because for me, what I love about, I mean, I think the best horror films are always ones where the character work for the human characters is exceptional, because the more you see them as real people, the more you identify with them, the more it means something when their lives are in danger.
Exactly. I totally agree.
And
like,
all
for
the
instance,
characters are really
for instance,
well
drawn. I won't say who it is, but the first person who finds himself in peril in this movie was someone that I really liked, I really identified with.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have a friend who's Australian who, you know, I almost could have sworn it was my friend doing the part.
Really?
Because he looked just like him, yeah. He's a puppeteer friend of mine. Yeah. And but I could relate to the guy because of this Australian friend of mine, and it kind of gave me an attachment to this character that made me care about him. So when something happened, I was like, oh, man, not him. Dude,
yeah, exactly.
Not him. Oh, shit.
That's what's so great about it. I mean, like, you think about the number of, like, slasher films where, you know, people get stabbed, and you don't care
you
about
don't
them.
Care. Because, yeah, it's like,
you know, okay, she's a cheerleader with nice tits. I mean, okay, I don't really care about her as a human being.
But that's all she's got going for
exactly.
her.
Exactly. This movie, I mean, it doesn't have a huge cast. I think it's got, like, what, 4 or 5 actors, tops?
Yeah.
But the character work is exceptional. You really...
Now, what did you think about the... Okay, obviously, I mean, without being too much of a spoiler, it's a horror movie with some kind of creature. Okay, I mean, that's basically, that's it. But what did you think about the more supernatural aspects of the creature? Like the real fast movement stuff?
I liked it.
Did you like that? Because to me, it almost spoiled it for me in the sense that, okay, I can believe maybe this is some kind of mutated whatever, homeless whatever thing. But that part of it, it did create an eeriness to the character, like the situation with the camera, which I won't go into detail, but you know what I'm talking about. And it kind of presented a little bit of a mystique to the character, a little bit of, but later when the thing with the security guard happens and everything, it just was like, okay, that's a little bit.
See, I kind of like that because I always feel that with these movies, there needs to be some payoff. You can't just be running and be scared and then you don't see anything, but you're still running and scared for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about it is they gave you these quick moments where you think you see something and something really happens really fast. And, you know, it's not at that point the characters know it's not them freaking out anymore. It's not their imagination. Something is down
okay, but
there.
See, I've watched the movie twice. I don't think you've watched it twice.
I watched it once.
Okay. I've watched it twice. And the scene that I'm talking about with the security guard saying, hey, you guys get out of here. Follow me back to the surface. There is the when he bites it, for lack of a better term, there's an you can actually see if you watch it the second time, a blur of the thing, the creature in question, zipping across the hallway of this tunnel, and of course getting him.
Yeah,
and it's like a blur, so it's like this thing's moving at like supersonic speed.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what lost me. I'm like, okay, if this is some kind of mutated homeless guy who's been living on his own feces and piss and God knows what else he's been eating down there in these tunnels, yeah, he's going to have that kind of energy to be like
well,
supersonic
fast. That's the point,
fast.
Though. That's what I really liked about the movie. Again, I hate to give – I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but I mean – I guess I don't know. I would like to talk about that, but I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah,
people,
I don't
know?
Either, and that's because why I don't know exactly how much to say, you know, because it is a new movie. And
yeah,
I do
suffice
want
to say, it's a movie more about mystery than about answers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's
really
certainly not a blood, guts, and gore fest.
No.
It is a scare the shit out of you in a very suspenseful way. Kind of, you know. But anyway, so how many organs?
I would give it 8.5.
Me too. At least,
I mean,
if not
it's
nine.
It's fantastic.
I really, really liked it. I really liked it. Well, I didn't want to rush you, but I do want, you know, we have a question that's actually pretty interesting.
Oh, hello.
We have a writer who's written into us at rottenzombiesmail.com. I'm sorry, at gmail.com.
Wait, rottenzombiesmail.
Rottenzombiesmail at gmail.com. Yeah, I want to get it right so people can write us. Anyway, okay, so Bad Apple in Richmond, Virginia, that's their handle,
okay.
writes in and asks this question. Will zombies attack you if you're sleeping?
See, that's a really good question.
That is a really,
really
good question.
Because if you think about it, I have never seen a scene in a zombie movie where a zombie attacks a sleeping person. Because usually the people are running or screaming
Okay, and to even add to that, because I was thinking about that when I got the question. Every zombie movie I've ever seen, the zombies pretty much ignore you until you make some kind of noise to let them know you're there.
Right.
You know, or they just see you, you know. So if you're sleeping, unless you're like a big heavy snorer or something like that, you know, if you're sleeping, I would think the zombies would walk right by you and not even know you're there. Wouldn't you think so?
I would think so, too. Unless, can zombies smell you? Can they smell warm human flesh?
I can't recall a movie that really got into that.
Yeah, it seems the zombie movies I've seen, they seem to react more to, like, sound and light.
Yeah, sound, sight, you know, something loud. You knock something over in a, you know, an abandoned store. Next thing you know, the zombies are after you. Yeah. So I don't know. I would say that it's a good chance that if you were sleeping, a zombie would just walk right or lumber right by and not even know you were there. Unless, like I said, unless you're like me and you snore loud.
Right. So basically, this is a tip to all of you that when the zombie apocalypse does happen, just sleep through it. It'll be all right.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. No problem.
Don't get a gun. Don't get a car. Just sleep.
Get something quiet like a slingshot or, you know, yeah, bow and arrow. Anyway, thanks so much for visiting us again on Rotten Zombies. We've enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.
1 hour. All right. Be good, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's our goal to entertain you. Just before we derail you.